The Criminal Justice Subcommittee will come to order. Ben, please call the roll.
Chair Trunow?
Here.
Vice Chair Barnaby?
Here.
Ranking Member Rayner?
Present.
Representatives Abbott?
Here.
Baker?
Here.
Brackett?
Here.
Bracy Davis?
Here.
Brannon? Casello? Representative Garcia has been excused. Representatives Gottlieb? Jock?
Here.
Michael?
Here.
Plakin?
Here.
Silvers?
Here.
Stark?
Here.
Tuck?
Here.
Yarkowski? We have a quorum, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Ben. Before we begin, a few reminders. I will ask everyone to please remember to silence your electronic devices. Also, as a reminder for our members and presenters, please ensure that you turn your microphone on when you are speaking and off when you are finished. Members, today we will be hearing from the Department of Law Enforcement. They will be updating us on statewide database for tracking sexual assault kits, the creation of which was required by HB 673, which passed during the 2021 legislative session. We will be gaining a better understanding of how the database was developed, who participates, and how the database works to aid survivors. Representing from Florida Department of Law Enforcement today, we are joined by Deputy Director of Forensic Science, Leah Clark. Deputy Director Clark has nearly 20 years of experience in forensic biology and DNA, predominantly with the Florida Department of Law Enforcement. Deputy Director Clark has served as a trainer, crime lab analyst, supervisor, and a statewide DNA technical leader accountable for quality assurance, training, and casework activities throughout the state. She has testified more than 150 times in Florida courts to biology, DNA testing, and related statistics, and provides training and support to the legal community. She is a published textbook author and has presented throughout the United States and abroad regarding crime laboratory DNA work, most notably the sexual assault evidence kit testing efficiency. From 2016 through 2019, Deputy Director Clark helped manage the FDLE rape kit backlog eliminating project. In 2021, she was promoted to Deputy Director of Forensic Services, helping to oversee the support of FDLE's forensic disciplines and services across six crime laboratories and the DNA database. Ms. Clark, thank you for being here with us this afternoon. You are recognized.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you for inviting me, committee, today to give you an update on the implementation of something that is very important to all of us. And on behalf of Commissioner Glass, I thank you for allowing me to give you an update and apologize for the absence of Director Jason Bundy. He's at a statewide forensic management meeting today, so I'll be standing in. And just from a historical perspective, 943325, which establishes the DNA database, or what we know as the offender or CODIS database, was updated to include 943326 in 2016. And this was a resultant to the backlog that we observed in the state and the awareness that sexual assault kits were not meeting the priority that they deserved. And this set forth several rules in place that we had to adhere to in the crime laboratory, such as turning this evidence around within 120 days. So I am happy to say that we are keeping the turnaround of rape kit testing under 90 days and have been since the implementation of this in July 1st, 2016. But the next step in the legislation was from 2021 in Gail's Law. And I don't believe Ms. Gardner is here today, but we do remain in contact. And I know that she's very pleased with the implementation and your support of her on this. We were able to obtain a software as a service, or kind of a cloud-based system known as Stax Track It. And I'll kind of step through how we meet the legislative requirements utilizing the system. So first, we did have to also implement a rule in addition to the statute. So I believe it's 1112D, or I'm sorry, 12D, 11? 11D12? We'll get it straight. And that was effective. That also is where we outlined the definitions for all of the terminology that's included in the statute. Like, what is a sexual assault evidence kit? What is a non-reporting survivor? And also, who must participate in the database? So that is all laid out for us there. And the statute itself requires that any survivor who presents, whether or not that person decides to report to law enforcement, that that individual will present and can have this evidence collected. So that also affords them to get social services and medical services that accompany having a sexual assault examination performed, a forensic examination. So inside the physical kit is a card, and I'll show you an example, but it does provide the survivor with all the information according to statute, including a URL or how you get to the database or the website itself, as well as a temporary password, a login and a password. And then when the individual logs in, they're prompted through a series of security type questions, such that if an individual lost their password, they could reset it themselves. But this card does indicate what they're entitled to under statute. And that includes the geographic location of the kit, so tracking it from the time it's collected at the medical facility to law enforcement custody, and then if it's being stored, versus if it's being forwarded to a crime laboratory for testing, so the survivor has the right to know the testing process is occurring, and then upon its completion, and then final, the deposition of the kit or where it's going to be stored afterwards until its destruction, and then also provide them any information if a DNA match were to occur. It doesn't provide the information about the source of the DNA or any genetic information, but it will let them know that, in fact, a DNA match has occurred, and that could prompt someone who was interested in participating in the criminal justice process to know to be in contact with his or her investigator or the state attorney's office if they wanted to participate in the remainder of that process. Now, the match itself can be delayed. The notification of the match can be delayed if the investigating agency thinks that perhaps disclosing the occurrence of the match could in some way impact that investigation. So it's not that they're withholding this information from the survivor, but if additional time is needed for them to conduct an investigation into the individual who's the source of the DNA, that affords them 180 days to do so. So this is the example of the card. The kits themselves are easy to identify versus the older kits. It has a bright green barcode on it, and that can be accessed with any number of applications or even a barcode scanner that most of our law enforcement agencies would have for tracking evidence or in the laboratory at evidence intake and then also at the medical facilities themselves. You'll note the card here is in English, but when you access the system, you can also opt to get question and answers in Spanish as well. So the kind of the background or the history on this, in our determining which vendor to go with, we knew that from the Rape Kit Backlog Project that this was going to be a bit of a larger project than some of the other states that had perhaps offered us freeware or something kind of like an Excel spreadsheet where we could kind of track our own. So in researching the available vendors, we selected Invita Healthcare, which is a company that is also known for tracking pharmaceuticals coming in and out when nurses check them in and out at a hospital. It's also the company that we utilize to track the 7,000 samples per month we put into our regular DNA database. So we had some confidence in this company's ability to give us a product. We also sought, at the request of the legislature, we sought some funding on the front end to kind of stand up this project. And we did receive from the Bureau of Justice Assistance what's known as a SAFE ITR, Sex Assault Forensic Evidence Inventory Tracking and Reporting grant. That grant is no longer available to us, but we were able to obtain an award of $960,000, which we were able to purchase the solution on the front end, and then there are ongoing costs associated with them kind of holding this information and providing the technical support to the Florida stakeholders who participate in the system. We took kind of a phasic approach because the initiation of the project occurred in Northeast Florida, and I myself was in Duval County at that time. We started with those four counties. We at that point in time, we were utilizing certified Rape Crisis Center victim advocates to kind of log in and play the role of survivor and test that interface and let us know if it was appropriate, if we needed to make any changes. And then moving forward into the second phase, we stretched across the north end of Florida through 37 additional counties. And we also picked up counties served by the Pinellas County Crime Laboratory, as well as the Indian River Crime Laboratory, because the FDLE has six DNA caseworking crime laboratories, and then our county crime laboratories also have five locations within the state. So you have a total of 11 laboratories that are responsible for their interface with the system. Ultimately, we completed the project, making it available statewide toward the end of April. We were glad, with April being Sexual Assault Awareness Month, in order to be able to make sure that that was available to all of our partners. And there is a press release that occurred May 2023. We were required to have this available statewide by July 1, 2023. So we were, I'm very proud and glad for the support that we were able to do that a little bit early. Just to give you an idea of the interface with the system, and I have two individuals in my reporting chain of command who interact with the system on a daily basis. And we can log in as sort of a policy center or administrative role. And this is where we manage who has access to the various portals within the system. So law enforcement is able to go in and interact with the information that they need to know, the crime laboratories with the information that's relevant to them, as well as the medical facilities. And they actually go into the system and order additional kits in this fashion as well. So when they're getting low on the number of kits that they have available, they actually place an order through the system, and that's paid for by the FDLE, and they can receive a shipment. So they're able to manage that inventory. And then finally, the survivor portal, where a survivor would log in and interface. And I will show you a little bit more about what the survivor actually sees and engages with. The process that the crime laboratory is involved with on the day-to-day basis is tracking the custody. So the physical location, whenever law enforcement brings evidence to the laboratory, we scan it into the system. This can trigger an alert to the survivor that your kid is at the lab and being tested, which we think is one of the parts of the process that was perhaps missing in the past, this kind of awareness of what was going on with the evidence that was collected from an individual. And then we update the testing status once that's complete to say that the case has been complete. And that a report has been issued basically to the law enforcement entity and the state attorney's office as to our findings. And then ultimately there will be an update if there is in fact a match. There are phone numbers and an email for support for anyone who has difficulty interacting within the system. The FDLE is not able to authenticate a survivor, but again, those password resets are kind of set up on the front end when the survivor first logs in. And then the law enforcement entity or the medical facility, either one, can also engage with the survivor and assist them if needed. And the survivor portal itself, there are a couple of different ways to access it. I've demonstrated here kind of a screenshot from a regular web browser, so sitting at a desktop, as well as on a mobile app like Safari from your cell phone. And then when you are logged into the survivor portal, it kind of lays things out in a chronological order, so my kit's details. And so the individual could follow that along. And the survivor also has the ability to turn off or on various types of notifications. So if I don't want to receive a notification about my sexual assault evidence kit between 8 and 5, Monday through Friday when I'm working, I can certainly turn that off, and then, or I can engage with it whenever I see fit. So it gives them a little bit more power over understanding where things are in the process. Once you're in the survivor portal, there's a good bit of information that's available to the survivor, and I've mocked this up with a kind of a false police department there, but they can follow it chronologically. So from the time the medical facility collects the kit and scans that barcode and hands over the victim or survivor card until it's picked up by law enforcement, transported to the laboratory, testing complete. The FDLE laboratories, we don't hold any evidence, so upon the completion of the testing, the kits themselves and any of that work product goes back to the original investigating law enforcement agency so they can follow where the kit is in real time. And finally, upon the DNA match, if that information is in fact released, it pretty much just tells the date so they can follow along the process, but it's not going to provide anyone's genetic information or a name or anything that could pose any sort of safety issue or concern. It also provides the investigating agency contact information at that point. So they do know who to contact if they do want to engage in the criminal justice system. So if it is a survivor who has not been engaged with the state attorney's office for some time, or they've lost their contact information, then the survivor can initiate that. Finally, their non-reporting kits also are sometimes collected. An individual may wish to have the evidence collected at that point in time and receive services, social services, medical services, have that evidence preserved, but perhaps not report to law enforcement at that time. So there is also a mechanism to record the geographic location of those kits. And we do have some survivors who convert to reporting at some point in time later, but this would give that individual an understanding of where that physical evidence is located and also provide contact information for the agency that would investigate that sexual assault based on jurisdiction. Finally, in totality, the portals themselves are composed of, or we have more than 300 law enforcement partners participating. Obviously, there are more than 300 law enforcement agencies in the state. However, some of them don't, just because they're a law enforcement entity doesn't mean that they investigate sexual assault crimes. So we have perhaps an airport police department or something that would be involved, and there are a school board police department. But we do have all 67 sheriff's office engaged. So we are covering the state at this point. More than 115 medical facilities or medical providers. And in statute, this indicates that anyone who provides emergency department services needs to be able to provide evidence collection and sexual assault evidence exams. However, not every hospital or every freestanding emergency department in every city is actually going to do this. And, you know, in some communities, it's somewhat dedicated. There's a standalone medical facility. So that's why that number does not match what you may think of as being the number of emergency rooms in the state. And finally, the 11 crime laboratories. We do continue to provide some ongoing training and in understanding that not everyone may have access to the internet or a cell phone at any given time. We have kind of put a little bit of a stopgap in place by having the certified rape crisis centers. Their advocates receive training from us and Invita Health as well on how to navigate that system in partnership with a survivor in case the survivor were to place a phone call and say, I have this card and I'm not sure what to do with it. And that's all also how individuals who are currently incarcerated are accessing the system as well. They would need to get in contact with their Department of Corrections inspector in order to make determinations about what's going on in the system. So we're continuing to provide that training. And overall, in order to stand it up, we did provide more than 100 individual training engagements. And as law enforcement and medical facilities cycle through their personnel, we have captured all of this information. So if someone new comes to the job and needs to learn his or her role in accessing the system, that information and training is captured, and also some single-page handouts for those places where they may only have one or two kits per year that they're dealing with. So we try to make sure everyone can comply as simply as possible. And I'd be happy to address any questions that you might have.
Thank you, Mrs. Clark. Members, do you have any questions? Ranking member, you are recognized.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chair, and thank you so much for your presentation, Ms. Clark. I have a couple of questions, but want to start with if you could clarify when the tracking of the kits begins. Is it when FDLE has possession of the kit?
You're recognized.
The tracking itself begins with the vendor that creates the kit. So someone who actually makes the envelope with the samples in it. We have this password, login, barcode information already stored. So when it is sitting at the hospital or the rape crisis center, the location of that kit is already known. And then at the time it is collected, it is associated with an individual survivor. So that survivor would be able to log into the system and see my kit was collected at Tallahassee Memorial Hospital, mm-hmm. but it has not yet been picked up by law enforcement or not yet been submitted to the laboratory. So it happens at the earliest possible moment.
Ranking Member.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chair, and thank you so much for the answer to my question. And this kind of goes to the last part of your answer. Who is responsible for submitting the testing kits to FDLE or the vendor? Is it the hospital or is it the survivor?
You recognize.
Survivors cannot submit evidence to the laboratory, and also that would perhaps impact prosecution at a later point. So that the only mechanism to get the kit into the laboratory is for a law enforcement entity to submit it. Because our goal, as you might imagine, when there's no one identified as being mm-hmm. a potential donor, is we want to be able to put this into a DNA database, which indicates there must have been a crime reported. So we accept the evidence itself from law enforcement entities only.
Follow-up?
Thank you so much, Mr. Chair, and thank you so much for that answer. As far as survivors being able to access the website and has there been any feedback from either the survivors or stakeholders when it comes to the website accessibility and user-friendliness?
You're recognized.
That's an excellent question. And while we can't really authenticate who's logging into what portal and when, other than it's someone we give access to, as far as the survivors are concerned, we can go into that administrative location in the Policy Center and see that it is, in fact, being accessed by survivors. So we know that there have been more than 500 kind of hits to the website, if you will. So we do know people are logging in and looking. We also are constantly getting feedback from our partners. The sexual assault nurse examiners have indicated perhaps we could put a QR code on the card itself. So we're accepting feedback like that, as well as working with the Florida Council Against Sexual Violence routinely for anything that might be a customization or an update to the system. But so far, the feedback has been from the victim advocates with both the rape crisis centers and the law enforcement entities and the state attorney's offices that it's very useful for them when engaging the survivor.
Representative Stark. Question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to clarify, are we on the assumption that these victims are getting to the certified rape crisis centers through law enforcement? Or how would they know to go what facility to go to that actually does the actual testing?
You're recognized.
That's an excellent question as well. So they may not want to engage with law enforcement on the front end. So the mechanism by which someone knows which facility to go to is provided by the Florida Council Against Sexual Violence. So we have, I believe, 35 certified rape crisis centers in the state, about half of which collect sexual assault evidence in-house on their own. The others would be by someone either calling 911 or calling a rape crisis hotline associated with their geographic area or just going into a medical facility. So we've provided really extensive training with the emergency departments and hospitals, HCA healthcare, or the people who have a lot of facilities in the state to make sure that they know the process that is unique to their geographic area.
Thank you.
Representative Baker, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to confirm, if a victim completes a kit, but they don't want to report it at that time, did you say that the kit is kept in a safe location, whether it's at those centers or at a medical facility?
You're recognized.
So that's going to vary by jurisdiction. Throughout the state, there are some great crisis centers that will secure the evidence, and they've kind of consulted with us on an appropriate means of storing that. There are some that are stored with a law enforcement partner, So, for example, even if an individual does not report to law enforcement at that time, because it is kind of simply a barcode, that it may be passed along to the local sheriff's department, who holds them in an area is kind of with anonymity. And then ultimately, if the survivor reengages with the Rape Crisis Center and says, I would like to report, or engages with the law enforcement entity, then the geographic location of the kit is known. But that does vary from jurisdiction to jurisdiction as to where they are physically held in the interim.
Follow up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So it's not required under statute right now that they must keep it and store it in a safe location, or is that just up to the jurisdiction and the policy, or how does it fluctuate? What are the differences? Would you recommend that we pass a law to make sure they are keeping and storing the kits?
You're recognized.
Because I can see in a lot of situations that a victim doesn't want to report yet.
Correct. And then we do have a number of people who perhaps may convert at a later
right.
time. So at present, there is no statute that indicates by whom and where those non-reporting kits must be stored. So it is a very much a jurisdictional decision. And there is an additional statute that there should be a sexual assault response team in every community, which could kind of inform on best practices unique to that community. So at this time, in lieu of there being a statute, it is an individual, it's a decision for a locality.
Follow up,
yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So do you have data on that you can provide us with?
Which
jurisdictions do keep it, what their policy is, how long they store it for, et cetera?
You're recognized.
I have anecdotal understanding just based on my work in the space. For example, I do know that in Miami-Dade, the hospital entity, which is also the medical facility that collects the kits, so the Rape Crisis Center is part of the hospital. So they do, in fact, store them themselves. And they store them in accordance with advice provided by the crime laboratory there. And I know that in the Fourth Judicial Circuit, where I was the chair of the Sexual Assault Interagency Council, the Sheriff's Department there will hold them for a three-county area. So it really depends on what partners are at the table and who has the capacity to do what, short of a statute that says it will be held by a specific law enforcement entity for a given amount of time. That is something that at this point has not been brought forward.
Okay. Thank you. No more questions.
Thank you. I have one question. How far does the database reach? Is it state lines or nationwide?
So this particular database is for the state of Florida only. We do occasionally receive individuals who were sexually assaulted in another state, and they come in and have a kit collected here in Florida. That is sent back to the investigating agency in that jurisdiction. Each state is kind of tasked with setting up its own. I believe we're up to about 35 states now that have some sort of tracking system. Some other larger states that are utilizing the Stacks Track It in the same fashion that we are include New York, Texas, Michigan. So some other states that have what you might consider to be the throughput of sexual assault kits that we have.
Thank you for that. Questions? Well, thank you. Thank you for your presentation here today. I hope that everyone feels that they've gotten something from this overview. From this program. I'd also like to recognize Commissioner Glass and his chief here today. Thank you for putting this together and keeping us up to date. Members, any final comments for today? Members, if there's no further business, that'll conclude our meeting. Representative Jacques moves that we rise.